When I started living in this country, for a while I would have dreams in which there was an enormous bear in my space, sometimes right in the bedroom. The bear is not actually attacking me, but it is so much bigger than me that I am scared. And this goes on for a while. And finally I decide, as I would counsel anybody else, okay, Robert, brave up, get back into the dream, confront the bear, and find out why the bear is constantly turning up in your space. So I'm not using any gee-whiz technology. I'm not even using the heartbeat shamanic drumming we use in the workshops. I'm just sitting in an easy chair, and my intention is to get back into this dream space and confront the bear. And bang, I am there. And it's not a cute new age soap bubble. I can smell the bear. It's rank and feral. It's four times my size, and I'm not enthusiastic about getting close to it, but I force myself to step up. And when I step up to the bear, it hugs me without hurting me and wants me to look down at my heart. And I notice something that is amazing, but just so in the visionary experience. At the heart, I'm joined by something like a thick umbilical pumping life force to the heart of the bear. And I can't interpret this. I just see it. It's just so. In a way I cannot explain, I'm joined at the heart to the bear. And the bear wants me to swap skins with it. That seems unlikely, but in the visionary state, I do it. The bear wants to dance with me. I do that too. And the bear says to me with its mind, call on me and I will show you what people need in order to be healed. This became a source of amazing guidance in my personal healing and in my ability to assist others. And the lesson I drew from it is sometimes the healing power of dreams is waiting for us beyond the fear, but stepping through the fear is the challenge or test or ordeal we have to undertake in order to access the healing. And very quickly, again, I think now as I talk to you about this and this healing aspect of dreams, of a Vietnam vet who came to me who was terrified by a great white shark in his dreams. In fact, he didn't even recognize it as a great white shark to begin with. He wouldn't look at it. He thought it was a white sail that on the horizon he would not look at. He'd been exposed to Agent Orange and other chemicals in Vietnam. He'd had a bout with cancer, recovered, was faced with a recurrence of cancer. The long and short of it is that when he was encouraged to step through his fear, he was a brave man in combat, but was not so brave initially in relation to his dreams. When he was encouraged to step through his fear and claim a positive relationship with the shark, he remembered that sharks do not get cancer. And in an exercise of the imagination, he was able to picture himself receiving the shark into his body, and he could see the shark eating the cells of his disease, and he escaped any recurrence of cancer. And every day he goes swimming, he sees himself swimming with the shark. That's an example of one of the healing aspects of dreaming, which is it gives us authentic, fresh, personal imagery for fixing what is wrong with us.
And it works.
And it works. You know, this is one of the key things in the new book, The Three Only Things, that the body believes in images. This is what our medical science tells us, too. I mean, every time we give our energy, the energy of our attention, to a thought, a feeling, a mental picture, an image, a pharmaceuticals factory inside the body is pumping out drugs. You know, we pump out the chemical equivalent of Valium when we give our mind to a healing, relaxing scene. So if we can learn to choose the images to which we give our attentions, we can do a lot better. Where do we get those images? Well, one of the places we get them is from our dreams.
What about utilizing your soul, maybe astral projection, in order to get into this state? Does that work?
Well, traveling outside the body is not a difficult exercise. We do it every night when we go to sleep, whether we're aware of it or not. To project consciousness outside the body and brain is a trick we can accomplish as soon as we drop the illusion that consciousness is ever confined to the body and brain. There are different modalities for doing this. I mean, there are techniques of astral projection, including techniques for shamanic journeying, which is what I have principally practiced and taught. We use monotonous heartbeat drumming to help ourselves travel beyond the body on an agreed intention. But my preferred mode of traveling beyond the body, George, is what I would simply call mind expansion or mental expansion, which is a process in which you develop the ability to extend your awareness so that it encompasses whatever you need to know. You bring it inside an expanding field of mental awareness. This has the great advantage that you don't have to check out of your body, which is not necessarily a healthy thing to do. It might be healthy. It might be a point of discovery for you. I'm speaking of somebody, of course, who's had no difficulty checking out of his body at any point in his life and did so in rather dramatic circumstances through those NDEs. I'm not knocking the idea that learning to travel out of the body might be part of your process of waking up to the nature of the larger reality of life after death and the rest of it. But I'm just saying that you know, in terms of our survival and our ability to get it all together, learning a practice of expanding your consciousness to include and encompass whatever you need to understand might be the most worthwhile way of approaching this. This is one of the techniques of imagination that I teach and write about in the new book.
Do you know anybody of notoriety, Robert, that has used their dreams and dream state to get to where they are?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, it's huge. I mean, for some reason, because of where we just gone, I was thinking of Napoleon, I mean, the French emperor and great military commander. This is wide awake dreaming now, but I was thinking of accounts of Napoleon sitting on the far side of the hill away from the battlefield, so visualizing what's going on in the battle and getting a clearer reading of what was going on in the battle than what was available to him looking through the fog of war, through the cannon smoke and so on. I mean, that's an example from history, and history is full of this. What famous people, what great people have used dreaming? Let's take an example from the history of science.
Sure.
Because some people talk as if this dream stuff is unscientific. They are clueless about the real history of science. Our great scientists, our great breakthrough scientists have all been world-class dreamers. Let's take a contemporary of Einstein, Wolfgang Pauli, Nobel Prize-winning quantum physicist. Brilliant, brilliant man. And in a moment, I want to talk about the Pauli effect, which involves how our thoughts and feelings shape the material world around us. Pauli called dreams his secret laboratory. I give a brief account of his dream experience in my new book, The Three Only Things. One example of the extent to which Pauli was a dreamer as he developed his groundbreaking theories of physics, changing our understanding of reality, was that he shared 1,300 dream reports over an 18-month period with Jung. I mean, that's just a sample of how prolific he was as a dreamer. He went again and again into the dream space and the imaginal space, the space of the true imagination, to do his best work. He was also a poster boy for understanding coincidence or synchronicity, understanding the way that mind and matter interweave in our dreaming universe. He was, despite his brilliance, maybe this was a contribution to his brilliance, he was a roiling mass of conflicted emotions, and these resulted in physical effects around him. We know people who stop watches and blow out light bulbs. That's nothing to Mr. Pauli. Pauli goes to Princeton for the first time. They've got a gee whiz, highly expensive new cyclotron, and it just blows up the moment Pauli arrives, and everybody says, it's a Pauli effect. Pauli was rather pleased by this. He goes to the opening of the Jung Foundation in Zurich. He's a board member. He's a friend of Jung. And there's a huge Chinese vase, a huge Chinese vase on one of the tables, and it just flies off the table as if a giant hand has pushed it and creates a flood of water amongst the dignitaries, and it's the Pauli effect. He is, a poster boy, not only for the role of dreaming in the history of science, but for the way that mind and matter interweave. All of this is hugely important, by the way, for us to understand the way that the quantum effect works on the human level.